So, Brad, I want to check in today from a marketing standpoint, because I know you're, as a lover of language, you're going to love this marketing thing. Now, you know that of the two mRNA vaccines in the United States, one has gotten approved by the FDA, the Pfizer vaccine, right?
Right.
Now, one of the things that FDA approval lets you do is kind of unique to the United States. It's weird among Western democracies. You can now market the vaccine, right? You can advertise it, and put it on radio, put it on TV. And so part of that means you also get to file a trademark, right? So Pfizer, I don't know if you know this, they have found a name for their mRNA vaccine. They call it Comirnaty, right? Which is like, it's a standard shitty like drug name. Like, you're like, all right, I get it, Comirnaty. I mean, what's somewhat clever about it is it has mRNA in the name, like Comirnaty.
But it sounds like you're trying to say community with a cleft palate.
Yes, it sounds like community by a drunk guy, like, we're all here in a Comirnaty. We're all working together here. There's no reason why we can't.
I couldn't help but notice that you were part of my community.
So, okay, now this is great. So I was like, all right, community, that's a fairly standard shitty drug name. You know, I get it. But then I was like, oh, I wonder what Moderna is going to have when they get FDA approval. And they've already released what their name, and I'm not joking about this, right? This is the Axe body spray of vaccine names. They are going to trademark their vaccine as Spikevax, 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 Spikevax. That is
really
going to be.
They're going to have the word spike right there in the name.
Spikevax.
As in a spike of COVID cases, a spike of new spreader events. They're going to put the word spike right there in the name.
To me, Spikevax just feels like a 19-year-old that surfs in the morning, having grown up in California, surfs in the morning, maybe goes to work his restaurant job at night. His van is a little beat up, but he takes Spikevax! Spikevax! Like, are you going to take Comirnaty? Are you going to take Spikevax?
Well, listen, I was speaking on behalf of all of my family members who were on Facebook saying that they weren't going to take the vaccine because it wasn't FDA approved. All I'm looking forward to is all of them running out the door now that it's FDA approved to get
the
vaccinations.
Now that we got FDA approval. Yeah. Oh, boy. We all have the dumb cousin that has been listening to Facebook. We all have one.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not getting vaccinated. All right, thanks. Take your third grade education and tell me about why this vaccine is no good. And on that note of abuse, I'm going to say hello, everybody, and welcome to Comic Lab, the show about making comics.
And making a living from comics, I'm Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and creator of Evil Inc.
And I'm his pal Dave Kellett, cartoonist of Drive and Sheldon and co-director of Stripped.
And this week's Hour of Comics Advice is made possible by your support at patreon.com/comiclab. So Dave, let's talk comics.
Let's talk comics, my friend. And a reminder that this week's show and every week's show goes out live to our Live Gab VIP members over at Comic Lab at patreon.com/comiclab at the $10 level.
Yes.
You can watch the show live and watch the archive visuals. How does one watch the archived visuals, Bradley?
The best way is to go in through the Patreon page, click on that link because you'll have the password right there. And then you can just pull up the archive right there and watch the show. It's actually kind of a nice way to have a little something working in the background while you're working on your own comic.
Absolutely. So check us out over at patreon.com/comiclab. And Brad, we got to give a huge shout out and a thank you to our sponsors for this week. The good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, the makers of the Wacom One, which I have to say has been really delightful to see how many folks from this show have jumped into digital drawing through the Wacom One. And that's been nice because I have to say that's a really easy first step. The cost is not tremendous. It's very affordable at the, now I think it's under $300 point. Mm-hmm. And it is like Brad always says, it's a portable professional results from a really delightful machine.
Yeah, it really is. And it makes a huge difference, especially that portability part. You're going to find that the ability to set up now that we're coming out post COVID, right? I've already gotten my walking papers to where I'm going to have to start driving the kids to choir again. We're going to start doing this again. We're going to start doing that again. And at first I broke into a cold sweat because, you know, I don't want to leave the house. But then I remembered I've got a Wacom One. I can just go set up over there in the high school gym. Museum, take a little spot. I know where all the outlets are, set my Wacom One up and get a little stuff done. And even if it isn't the best possible way, that Wacom One is going to make it the best of all possible worlds.
I got to tell you, when I used to work in Mattel Toys, I don't know if I ever told you this, on the non-company time, I would go out during my lunch hour and cartoon in my car. I would usually write, but every once in a while, I would try to lap draw with a board. Had I had a Wacom One, I could have gotten actual stuff done at Mattel when I worked there. But anyway, all that being said, we've got a big show today, Brad. So let's jump right into it. What's our first topic for the day, my friend?
So yeah, Dave, we've got a great question from Joe Tato Chips, who's a $5 Patreon backer. And Joe says, hey, Brad and Dave, where do you share your story comics, Drive and Evil Inc., to attract new fans? I've got new eyeballs on my one-off gag comics by sharing on r/comics over on Reddit, but that doesn't seem like the right place to attract readers on an ongoing serialized comic. Do you have any suggestions? I'd also appreciate suggestions of where to share content for kids, since my story comic is family friendly. Thank you. I love the show, Joe Tato Chips. So from Joe, we're going to talk about long form comics. And Dave, what are your thoughts? What's the best way to do audience building for a long form story comic?
Well, you and I are going to disagree because I know your thoughts on long form story comics, that comics are comics and you can market them all. I have a much more woe is me. The world is falling apart when it comes to long form storyline in terms of marketing and sharing and bringing that out into the world on social media platforms. I personally, Brad, think, having done both comic strips like you and long form comics like you, that I just feel that it is infinitely harder to market and share a long form story than it is a standalone gag, which sells itself, gives you everything you need to know to get in and get out, and makes itself very shareable. Mm-hmm. Long form just does not have that same easy to jump into, easy to share, all self-contained in one update kind of thing on social media. So I take the strong opinion that it is hard to share. How do you feel about it, Brad? Because I know you're going to tear me a new one, but this is where mommy and daddy disagree. It's okay. Keep going.
I'm so delighted. So I sat down and wrote out an entire screed here because I'm a little bit passionate about this, and because I've been doing this kind of outreach for going back to 2007 when we did the How to Make Webcomics book. But then in 2010, I started doing webcomics.com. And that was one of the very first issues that came up. What about long form comics? And I said back then, a lot of the stuff that I'm saying here applies directly to long form comics. And the long form creators at webcomics.com hand waved me. They were like, no, you don't know what you're talking about. You're a comic strip guy. And I said, no, all this stuff applies. And then in 2016, I proved it to myself. I ended Evil Inc., the comic strip, launched Evil Inc., the graphic novel, and put myself to the test. One of the things, I'm so glad you said, woe is me, because one of the sentences I've got right here at the top is that nobody clutches onto their victimization like a long form comics creator. Holy freaking moly. Nobody, you will tell these people, you will grab them in your embrace and say, no, it's you've got to loosen up. It's a lot of the same stuff. You've got to open. And they want then their victimization.
I have to say, having exclaimed my victimization, I'm ready to be dressed down and told why I can stand strong and tall in this world.
Yes, yes.
Go ahead. Give me the update on how I can better market Drive online.
Well, here's a few things I want to talk about. Number one, I want you to open your mind to the fact that there are no special rules for long form comics. Okay. And that means that the past, and by the way, David, right now we are recording episode 199. right? This is
our 200th Eve. Yeah. It's our 200th Eve, Brad.
Yes. This, and not for nothing. We haven't missed a week. And it's all because I love sitting here on Tuesday and looking over there and seeing you week after week. I got to tell you.
Same is true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, this has been nothing but an unending joy. But yeah, all of the 199 episodes that we've been talking, we've been talking to long form creators. They haven't been listening because we didn't say the word long form, but we've been talking to them. And all of this stuff applies to you. Trust me, trust me, trust me. So I'm going to say a few things. I want you to think about them. Number one, your outreach should start with all of the socials and all the platforms and all of the distribution sites. Okay.
Okay, I do that. Okay. So I'm going to checklist this as we go because you're saying that I should not be so woe is me. Keep going.
Right. So that means Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Webtoons, Tapastic, Comixology, Drive Through Comics. All of those places are outreach. All those places are where you can do a certain degree of audience building. Okay.
Right.
It also means that all those other things that we said apply, like do a good comic, which I know that you do, Dave, because I'm a Drive reader. But also, if you're trying to build an audience, then every page you post is somebody's first ever experience with your comic. And if you don't have a strategy to grab them in that moment, you're going to lose them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that means they don't need to understand the entire storyline, but they do need to understand that moment in the story.
Right.
And they need to have a satisfying outcome by the time that page or that post, and we're going to talk about the difference between a page and a post, by the time that page or that post reaches its end.
Right.
So if you're preparing your pages with this in mind, you might actually see some traction on our comics because you're providing a self-contained, satisfying reading experience.
Okay, now is this the end of your screed or is there more to
not
go?
Let's
keep screeding away then. Okay. Let's ride this screed all the way to town.
So here's another thing that I want you to be open to considering. And that means, what did I just say about posts and pages? What does that mean? Okay, that means rethinking about how you write your pages for one. You know, in other words, instead of a page being a part of a book, a page has to be either a self-contained reading experience or a part of a larger self-contained reading experience that you plan to put on social media as a post.
Yep.
What I'm trying to say there is I understand that in some cases, one page can't be a self-contained satisfying reading experience. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, you cannot post that alone on social media.
Right.
Maybe your post is two pages.
I was just going to say, I have some, maybe 5 to 6 times a year, I do what I call a double tall.
Yeah.
Or there have been rare occasions where even a double tall wouldn't have been satisfying. So I do a triple tall.
Yeah.
And so, yes, I know exactly what you mean. Keep going. I'm underlining your great screed so far.
Here's what that means. That means that you cannot afford that knee-jerk approach that you may have been taking where you just post a page on social media without thinking about, is this a self-contained, satisfying reading experience?
Yep.
You just can't post a page. You've got to post a post. See the difference? Not a page, but a post. Okay, now, here's another thing, and I think Joe Tato Chips is making a very smart indication here. And what he's saying is, I'd also appreciate the suggestions on where to share content for kids because my comic is family friendly. And that's the right question to ask because one of the most popular mistakes I see long form comic creators make is that they're looking for long form comics readers. Okay. And all of them, except you, they're all out there saying, where's the long form comics readers? Here's the problem with that. Those people do exist, and every last cartoonist rejoices when they cross paths, but there's not enough of them to build a career out of. And besides, let's face it, those people who are specifically walking out there looking for a long-form comics to read,
right?
They're not, there's enough of them, there's a certain number of them, but there's not enough of them to build a career off of them. In other words, going out and trying to find specifically long form comics readers is not going to build you a career. What you need to be doing is looking for people who aren't looking for you. Looking for people who didn't even know they wanted to read a long form comic before they came on to you. That's where you're going to find your career. And that outreach is happening every day on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. What I'm saying is, I see that smile. I'm coming near the end of my screen and then you can have the rebuttal. I want you to think about, you don't do that by focusing on the format of the comic. Long form, short form, these are all words that hold significance only for other cartoonists. The way you do this is by focusing on theme. Now, Joe's made a very good step. He's looking for kids, and that's a step in the right direction. But I want you to think one more step. You need to be focusing on theme. What's the theme of your comic? And where do those fans or the fans of that sort of entertainment tend to congregate online? In other words, stop thinking about yourself as a comics artist. Start thinking yourself as an entertainer.
Yeah.
You're not looking for comics fans. You're looking for fans. You're not looking for long form readers. You're looking for readers. You understand the difference? It's all about how you think about this. I'm not looking.
Very personal over there for a second, and you look right in my eyes there. You understand the difference, dummy? Hey, stupid. You get what I'm, are you picking up what I'm throwing at you? Sorry, keep going.
But think about it. And here's where I really get passionate, because, and this is why I said that victimization thing to kind of get your attention, because take that advice that I had just a couple of weeks back about comic conventions. What did I say? I said, I wouldn't suggest you go to any comic conventions. If you're listening to this podcast, I would suggest you find a convention that has to do with your theme. Like if you're doing a comic about being a single mother, you know, finding a group or a trade show in which there might be a lot of mothers, a lot of mommy bloggers might be going there, right?
Right.
Your goal is not to find a comic convention, but to find a gathering of people that fits your theme and be the only comic on the floor. That's what I would suggest. And by the way, that exact same concept applies directly to the marketing outreach of your comic. It has nothing to do with whether you've got a long form or a short form. It has everything to do with thinking about yourself as an entertainer that's going towards a certain demographic or a certain group of people, a certain type of fan base, and addressing that instead of the number of panels that are on your page. So I wouldn't go looking for kids. I'd go to look for people predisposed to liking my kinds of topics and the kinds of topics that my comic deals with. And then since I'm doing a family friendly comic like Joe, I would be content in the knowledge that since I'm casting a wide net, I'll be doing something that's appropriate for the kids and the adults who wind up in that net. Okay. That's my thoughts on long form comics. I think focusing on your format is leading you down the wrong path.
Wow. Well, I want to say, first of all, as we wrap up that 45-minute screed, I want to thank all the marathon volunteers who ran up with little cups of water to you as you were going by, because that was really nice. All those volunteers, they make the marathon happen. And those little cups of water, you didn't see it at home. Brad was splashing the little cups of water on himself as he was finishing up his 45-minute screed there.
You don't know this at home, but I did that all in one breath.
Do you know that moment where back in the day when James Brown would kind of droop down on stage and they'd come out with the cape and then he'd bust back up. He's like, get back on the scene, that kind of thing. Yeah. That's where you're around minute 30 there. That's where you're kind of fading. Then they came in with the little cape and you're like, oh, also, you got to work on the theme of your comic. Bop, 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 bop. It was great. So first of all, I think all of those are excellent points. And listening along with them, I have to say that I was checking them off as to what I do with Drive.
Yeah.
Do I make each post satisfying in terms of whether it is a post or a page, it has a completeness to it. It is satisfying.
Yeah.
A new person could jump in and at least somewhat understand the theme.
Yes,
yes I do that.
Yeah.
Do I share them on social media? Not all the ones you listed, obviously, but on a good portion of them. Yes, I do that. Do I try to market it for not only the joke of the day, but also the theme, broadly speaking? I do that. Now, having said all of that and, mm-hmm. and agreeing with all of what I thought was a very well thought out argument that it is the same to market long form and short form, I will still say, Brad, it is not the same thing to market a long form comic as you did a lot of things about the construction and the marketing of the comic, which is all fair and good.
Yeah.
But in terms of communicating that marketing, you cannot argue with the fact that it is easier to submit to Reddit or to social media a self-contained, all you need to know is in the comic strip or single panel and see that go viral versus the 5 likes and shares you'll get for a long form story, right? You can't disagree that that's not the case.
Yes and no. This comes back to that conversation between active and passive readers, too. Yes, okay. We've seen people go viral on a Reddit post. Sure. Those readers are passive readers. They never became
they
smashed the like button for that comic. They never got involved with
why is it always smash the like button, by the way? Why did that become a YouTube? Don't forget to smash like and subscribe. How about gently touch like and subscribe?
Nobody ever caresses the like button. No.
Yeah. You can just click. You can just click like and you don't have to smash it. Anyway, keep going.
No, but again, so yes, you and I both would love to see those kind of big numbers on mm-hmm. any post we do. But we also know that it's got a limited amount of actual value because how many of those people are actually becoming involved in your ongoing comic pursuits?
Yes. Okay. So I agree with you here, but I'm gonna roll in of all people, Wayne Gretzky. You know how that you miss 100% of the shots that you don't take.
Yeah.
Is Wayne Gretzky's quote.
Yeah.
Because you know you and I, big hockey guys, we love our hockey. Brad Geiger, you kill it. You can't get us away from the rink. We love a hockey game. Anyway, so what I was gonna say was, okay, so let's say I have a long form story that gets a page or an update that gets retweeted 3 times. Hooray, 3 times. Mm-hmm. I've had single panel comics that get retweeted 2,000-3,000 times, right?
Right.
So now here's why I'm rolling Wayne Gretzky into that, is that in terms of missing 100% of the shots you don't take, if I'm being retweeted by only 3 people for that long form story,
yeah.
I'm missing thousands of people of which I could potentially retain 1-3%. 3 if I'm really feeling lucky, right?
Right.
But that single panel comic is going out to tens, hundreds of thousands of people. I could potentially retain 1-2% of them, potentially, mm-hmm. right? And so that's what I mean about the Wayne Gretzky quote, is that like the long form doesn't even get its pants on by the time that the single panel comic is halfway around the world,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah, and here's my problem with what you just said. You're okay. pretending that the only way you could possibly do outreach is to post your comic. And you know that's not true. We've got the 4 seasons. So you've got so much more in your bag of tricks than just posting the comic. That's a small percentage of what you should be doing to do audience building.
Agreed. But I will argue that part of what has made Drive grow, part of what has made Evil Inc. grow,
yeah.
has been stick-to-itiveness.
Yes.
In the sense that you being around for 10 years helps in terms of being around versus 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But also word of mouth, I think, is the largest possible way that I grow an audience. I really do. Sci-fi fans tell other sci-fi fans, hey, you also like sci-fi comedy. You like Guardians of the Galaxy, or you like Hitchhiker's Guide, or you like Dune. You're going to love Drive.
Now, could you imagine if you actually focused your marketing on that very idea?
Okay, so let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So how would a long-form person market on social media or the like to encourage word of mouth?
Oh, my goodness. Well, number one, you find out where these people hang out. In other words, is there a Facebook group? Or is there a Twitter hashtag or Twitter group where these people tend to congregate? Are there different places online where these groups are? Goodreads, for example,
yes.
for sci-fi.
Yes.
There's a lot of different places that these people would hang out. Now, your approach is going to be dependent on where that is. Goodreads, it might just be that you become a member of the community. Remember way back in 2007 when we were doing a lot of this forum-based and message board-based kind of mm-hmm. outreach. Mm-hmm. What was it then? It wasn't posting a comic. It was becoming a part of the community. And then eventually, after you become part of the community, it's like, oh, yeah, I do this comic, whatever.
Right.
That kind of soft hand idea of jumping in and swimming in those waters for
soft
a while.
Soft hand is a disturbing phrase. Let's not use soft hand ever again on this show.
Soft pedal, soft soap. In other words, the soft touch. That's what
soft
I'm looking
touch,
for.
The there soft we go. Touch. I don't know why soft hand made me very uncomfortable.
But that's one kind of outreach. In other words, the whole thing that I talked about there, which is find where these groups of people that are most likely to be your fans are and do outreach there. And again, like I've been saying, that outreach isn't necessarily limited to posting a page or a post from your comic.
Well, so this is where I want to defer to you and say you are 1,000% right.
Yeah.
Finding a theme, a community, a subject matter, a specific angle that your long form story talks about. And bringing your comic into that community rather than just posting it on, a subreddit like comics or something. I 1,000% think that's a good idea. You are 100% right. I need you to acknowledge it's not the same. It's not the same as trying to market a short form comic. And maybe you won't. Maybe this is the hill that I'm unnecessarily dying on. You do a long form comic. You do not get the same social media shares as someone doing a short form comic. You just don't get in front of as many eyeballs as a short form comic.
That's hard. So part of this is that you continue to do a short form comic, right? And I don't, right? I switch from one to another. So you see a whole lot more back and forth than I do. I very rarely do short form work, especially that I share on social media. If I do short form, it's going right to my Patreon, where it's used to bolster what I'm doing there. So I don't know that I can, in good faith, sign off on that because I really don't know that that's true. However, let me tell you this, and this may be, I don't know. I'm gonna say this, and I'm gonna get your reaction. Sitting there and insisting that it's just much more difficult for a long form creator gains you nothing. You've accomplished nothing with that.
Right.
Although you're a self of defeatism. Right. What much more could you do instead if you opened up your eyes to the idea, to the potential that there's a lot more potential, there's a lot more possible out there than just deciding right now, that's it, I'm done before I started, it's just too hard.
Here's what I love about you as a friend. You knew that the way to win this argument is to ultimately appeal to my optimism and my positivity. That if you made the argument of like, what are you going to do? You're going to be a negative Nancy or are you going to get out there and do it? You know that I'm going to be like, you know what? I'm going to get out there and do it. I'm going to feel positive about this. And goddamn it, if you didn't win just by appealing to my positivity and my optimism. God damn it. Now I have to go do it.
Listen, I've known you for 20 years, Dave. It's been 199 Tuesdays staring right back and forth at you. I knew I had this one in the bag.
You brought out the big guns at the end.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? You just going to give up, David? Yeah. Or are you going to get out there and give it your best? Oh, well, God damn it. I'm going to give it my best.
Yeah. Well, because, conversely, if you just sit there and say, well, that's it. It's tough for long form. That closes all the doors.
Yes. No, you're right. I said all of my counter arguments knowing that I have built a big and happy and healthy audience for Drive. Let me do the flip side of this. It is infinitely harder for me, I feel like, to market and bring in new readers on social media. But I will say this, because I do everything else that you described in your screed, in terms of successful, satisfying updates, mm-hmm. in terms of making a post complete, yep. in terms of making a thematic comic that reaches to a very specific audience, all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. Because I do all of that,
yeah.
my audience for Drive is much more intensively devoted than Sheldon's audience. Even though Sheldon's audience is much larger,
yeah.
Drive brings in more devotion, brings yeah. in more commentary, brings in more community building, brings in way more money, and brings in a bigger response when the people get to a sketch or something at a convention, right?
But doesn't that tell you that doing it that way works?
I mean, yes, is what I'm telling you. God damn it, I'm trying to tell you you win. Just take the win, Brad. Take the win. I'm telling you, you've won. Why do you have to make me say it out loud?
Because I just realized it just a minute ago, and I was like, wait a minute, he's agreeing with me.
I am in this set, but yes. I am saying
you can't let go of that victimization, can you?
No. It's not victimization.
Yeah.
It's not victimization. I'm just saying I know that once I hook people into Drive,
yeah.
it is a damn good story.
Yes.
And it's really a wonderful marriage of adventure and a long form storytelling and individual character moments that are funny and heartfelt and joy filled. Right.
Yeah.
And I know that if I get someone to Drive, I can hook them, right?
Yes.
But I'm just saying out loud, it is harder to get someone to go to Drive
yes.
than it is for me to get someone to go to Sheldon. Now, I can get someone to go to Sheldon much easier, much, much easier.
Right.
The social media spread is much farther and wider.
Yeah.
But it's harder for them to feel devoted
yes.
to standalone comics or to a short-form comic than it is to Drive. That's what I'm saying to you.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with that 100%. Yes, it is difficult. Harder or not as hard. Now we're mincing hairs, but hard. Yeah. It's all hard.
You know? Yeah, no,
but it, the payoffs, yeah. I want to underline that because I found the same thing. The payoffs, once you do get that reader into a yes. long form
yeah.
comic,
yeah.
the payoffs are substantial.
Yeah. Substantial. And there's, I don't know if this is the right word, but they're steadier.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's kind of a slow and steady growth that's always going. You know, like no one ever really drops off from a long form story unless you've screwed the pooch, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
If you're continuing to tell a good story, people will stick with it. And I do find that a lot of the new people that come in are word of mouth. Like, you know, my sister-in-law has been telling me for months that I should try Drive, and I finally jumped in and hot damn, she was right.
Yeah.
This is exactly my kind of story. So that's what Brad gets back to in terms of satisfying updates,
mm-hmm.
Consistent posting schedule, consistent quality, appealing yeah. to a theme. I mean, you're right about all of that.
Yeah.
I'm just expressing that I wish it was easier to get more people to dip that toe, because once
yeah.
they dip that toe, I know that I can get them to dive into the waters of Drive, that kind
yeah.
of thing.
No, I agree with you 100%.
Also, I'm realizing I'm gesticulating a lot in this show, by the way. Have you noticed how much yes. I'm gesticulating?
I'm gesticulating all over the place.
I feel like this is what happens by me hanging out with my Cuban in-laws too much, is I'm all over the, and drinking a lot of coffee this morning, I guess. I'm gesticulating all over the screen. Sorry about that. All right. Hey, if you're listening while you work, take a minute to stand and stretch.
And while you're doing that, we're going to tell you why you should join us on Patreon.
When you do, you're going to get hours and hours of podcasts that we recorded just for backers.
And exclusive Patreon posts that go even deeper on Comic Lab topics.
And access to our exclusive Discord server, which is a thriving community of professional cartoonists.
So you can support the show you love and get tons of actionable resources for your own cartooning.
And listen, if you can't swing a pledge this month, we get it. No worries.
Yeah, listen, you can still support the show by rating us wherever you get your podcasts.
Just leave a 5-star review and a few kind words.
That, along with mentions on social media, is incredibly helpful.
Now, everybody, let's talk comics. So, Brad, we've got a bit of an update for everybody today in terms of a previous guest, Rob Salkowitz, who we had on the show to talk about how in the same year that Kickstarter's comic-specific funding had gone up 25%, if everybody remembers, we had Rob Salkowitz on the show who was talking about how he viewed that as an artisanal success for comics and
right.
that only true professional comics could be found in comic book shops. And we, of course, then took that whole diatribe for the next follow-up show to talk about how, is it artisanal success if I've had a career doing this for 13 years now and I have an employee? That's artisanal. Or is it artisanal that we'd have to have no second job and people seem to love our Anyway, we took a lot of umbrage with it and it became a whole episode. And Brad, you have a fun update for us on that whole angle now.
Well, yeah. And by the way, if you want to go back and listen, those were episodes 53 and 54, respectively. 53, Salkowitz came on the show and also talking about how comic book shops were going out of business at an alarming rate, even though they were the only place you could find professional, quote unquote, work.
Right.
And then 54 was the show we called The Joys of Artisanal Success, where we talked about, you know, this whole thing that we've been doing for many, many years now and how it's not artisanal. Again, when you say you've got a warehouse full of merchandise, you've got an employee, several employees in some cases, you know, you had Nick Selleck on the show not so long ago. Is Nick from the Awkward Yeti, is his success artisanal? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a very odd form of gatekeeping that because they're on a shelf and have the Marvel logo on them, they are not artisanal, even though they're making less than Nick Selleck, who has multiple employees, a very large warehouse all full of stuff, and an audience that love him. Somehow that's artisanal. It's a really weird form of gatekeeping. So Brad, you want to jump in?
Go ahead. If that success was so great, would a bunch of those folks be running headlong to Substack right now? Because they'd like a little taste of that kind of artisanal success. But there's a few things. There's a reason we wanted to bring this up, not just to see my face go red another time, but because of this. We've talked on this show in the past about how one of the reasons we keep showing up week after week is because we really do believe strongly in being one of the voices that you have in your head as a mentor, right?
And a support.
Yes.
Because Lord knows we did not have that coming up. So keep going.
That's exactly right. And certainly not your only mentors, but one of the many voices of an older generation, perhaps, that you can have saying, hey, let me tell you a little bit about this. I've been down this road. I'd like you to know about it. That's exactly why we're bringing this up now, not to go through and rehash all of that stuff that he said, like calling Webtoons substandard fan created content mostly, and did a lot of denigrating comments about that being for, you know, young girls, and those clicks somehow didn't add up.
Yeah, it really was. It was highly gendered, wasn't it?
When somebody tells you who they are, believe them. That's what I'm going to tell you about that. But here's the deal. Again, in terms of being some people that have been doing this for a while, we want to pull you aside if you're a younger person, especially, and tell you, listen, we've seen this before, and we want to tell you how this goes from this step forward, because this is exactly the kind of gatekeeping that people like Dave and myself and a whole generation of cartoonists, this is what we faced in the early 2000s as newspaper comics were going out of business. And there was a lot of gatekeeping on us back then. There was phrases like, well, they're not real cartoonists. They were just T-shirt salespeople. Right. We weren't cartoonists. In fact, if you're a younger person, you may not realize that for several years, if your career was being made in webcomics, you were not allowed to join the National Cartoonist Society, the NCS. Mm-hmm. We weren't allowed. We could not even considered. OK, so this kind of gatekeeping is something we are very familiar with. And we need to have a talk about that because it's a little bit dangerous. Number one, the only power that these gatekeepers and gatekeeper adjacent people like Salkowitz, the only power they can have is if you listen to them and
if you let them,
give them any headspace. if you let them into your head, then they have power. But the real power is being built between you and your readers. The real power is being built right now as quality keeps popping up in the weirdest places. And it happens not to be in your comic shop. It happens not to be at Marvel or DC, but this, they can't stop it. it. It keeps popping up. And that includes your work, too, if you're listening at home. And you cannot let people like this get into your head. Now, here's another thing that I want to say about that whole thing. Salkowitz used the term substandard fan created content. And I started thinking about that. And unless your name is Jack Kirby or Steve Ditko or Stan Lee, almost all of comics history is fan created content.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And stop and think about this when I'm telling you, I got into comics. Brad Geiger got into comics because I wanted to be Burke Breathed, right? Scott Kurtz got into comics because he wanted to be Jim Davis. Dave Kellett got into comics because he wanted to be Brad Geiger. You know, all of us wanted to be somebody. All of us came into comics as fans.
I will say, by the way, but not letting that pass under the bridge, I will say that's true because as a cartoonist that was 20, 25 years my senior, I looked up to you. I thought, this old man seems to really have it together. Someday when I'm his age, I want to be as good a cartoonist. And I was young and spry and healthy, and I was thinking, this old guy, he's still got it together. So yes, I will second that remark, yes.
You were young and spry. What happened?
Oh, got me. You got me. You got a real squeal out of me on that one.
I'm telling you, I've been holding on to that line for a week. I've just been like a long form cartoonist with victimhood. I've just been holding on to it. And I can't tell you how, but seriously, jokes aside, we all came into comics as fans.
Yes.
And by the way, when you look at any of our early work, it was substandard compared to the work we're doing now.
Right.
To try to put somebody down with a phrase like that is egregious, quite frankly. And you can't take it from a couple of people who are both very similar in age, who have been doing this for a long time. don't let them get into your head. You get back to the drawing board and do your stuff. Don't let anyone tell you that you're substandard. Don't let them make you feel bad because you came into comics as a fan. We all came into comics as a fan. Shame on that person for saying that, but don't you let them into your head.
Right. You know that quote that always gets misappropriated to Gandhi of, you know, the first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, and then they fight you, and then you win. And that was very much the case of what happened to us in the early 2000s with newspaper cartoonists.
Yeah.
First they ignored us. Then they laughed at us thinking like, what are these jokers doing this stuff? They don't realize the real money is in newspapers. We did realize the real money was in newspapers. And we also realized it was going away lickety split and we better figure out a new business model, right? And then they fought you. And we had about 3 or 4, maybe 5 years where they genuinely fought us online about like, why are you guys doing this? This is stupid. This is dumb. You're ruining the business. We're not ruining the business. The reading taste of the public moving digital is what's ruining the business, right? And then you win, and that's what happens. How often do we have that print versus digital argument anymore, Brad? Not at all.
Never.
Because there's very few careers in print.
Because what's the point?
Yeah, what's the point? Okay, let's keep arguing, you know. And so, unfortunately, the same thing is now about to start happening with the same DC Marvel crowd. And for whatever reason, I think because it tends to be long-formish, they're aiming it at kind of a Webtoons crowd, if you know what I mean. Like it tends to be DC and Marvel versus Webtoons. And here's what I say as a not huge Webtoons reader. I will say the arguments tend to be youth-based or gender-based or orientation-based. And it's always like, no. Mm-hmm. I don't think you realize comics are super welcoming to different voices telling different kinds of stories. And the fact that you don't like it doesn't mean that it's not an incredibly valid form of comics. And also, by the way, these people have 40 times the audience you will ever have in your Marvel or DC title. So it's the argument is repeating itself. And here's what's going to happen. Webtoons is going to win. Webtoons is going to have the Netflix shows. And they're going to have, it's already starting to happen with like lore and all and that kind of thing. So keep going, Brad. What were you going to say?
Dave makes a really good point, and you need to be prepared for this as well. this will get meaner.
It will get meaner.
The years go on in the next couple of years. This is going to get vicious because again, Dave and I have seen this. We've been down this road. Mm-hmm. It's going to get meaner. The insults are going to get nastier, and there is going to be some real knockdown dragouts over this as those gatekeepers and the people who want to hold on to the way things used to be for whatever reason.
Right.
As they get more and more panicked, as they see it slipping away, it's going to get meaner. Be prepared for that. Be prepared for that. It's absolutely coming.
Yeah.
But history is going to bear out, and you're going to see on the other end, it's frankly much better for everybody. Again, going back to that Substack story, this all ends up with a rising tide that's going to lift all of the boats. Mm-hmm. And all these people who are upset and mean and nasty because they see something going away really can't appreciate. And I'm an optimist. I think they're going to come around. They're going to see it eventually. Yep. That this thing didn't end. It just evolved to a new thing that they're still going to have their superhero comics. They're going to still have that kind of Marvel and DC flavor. And now they're going to have a whole bunch of other flavors to choose from, too.
Yeah, it's funny how much this ties into whole larger conversations that we have about how when the Comics Code came about, we really got a winnowing down of stories in America and partially in Canada down to superhero comics and Archie and New Yorker and comic strips. And that was it. We lost the Westerns. We lost the romances. Well, you look at Webtoons. Turns out people love romance. They love relationship comics. You know what I mean? And the whole reason that disappeared was stupid. And so the fact that that's coming back is amazing for comics. It's great. And the gatekeeping of like, well, that's not real. That's not real money. Okay, here's the problem is that when people are afraid, it is the worst aspects of them coming out. And so over the next 2 or 3 years, as DC and Marvel print withers on the vine and comic shops wither on the vine, you're going to see people afraid. And that's why Brad and I are saying the arguments are going to get meaner and nastier and the comments are going to get meaner and nastier. But the way you win is just keep your head down, ignore them, and keep pleasing your audience with the great stories that you're telling. That's the way you win.
Yeah. Don't stop. Don't stop. Don't let anybody talk you out of your dream. That's horrible. And again, it's going to happen. So, and we will be here with you, by the way, we've been here for 199. We're going to be here for another 199 and we'll be here as that happens. Just reminding you, we're not going to spend a whole lot of time on it because it doesn't deserve it.
Yep.
But we're going to be here to remind you those people mean nothing. You go back to work and build your audience. Now, speaking of building our audience, Dave, it's time that you and I go back to paying attention to ours. I've got another $5 Patreon backer with a question
that needs to
be asked. This one comes in from Adam, who says, "Ahoy, Brad and Dave." This is a great question, Dave. You're going to love
it's Captain Crunch writing this question in. Is that what's happening?
That's right. That's a pretty good cap'n. Adam says, do you think that the discoverability in Kickstarter's ecosystem is strong enough to release a graphic novel without a social media presence? I'm looking to spend my marketing energy in more productive ways rather than fighting social media algorithms. And it occurred to me that Kickstarter may have already have the built-in audience that a comic creator needs to be successful. Thanks for all you do, Adam. So I ask you, Dave Kellett, somebody who has just recently wrapped up a very successful Kickstarter campaign yourself, and we both know Kickstarter has amazing discoverability, maybe between, depending on your campaign, between 20 and 30% of your Kickstarter backers might be people that discovered you right there on Kickstarter, never heard of you before.
Right.
Dave, would you ever try to do this with no social media at all?
I say this with absolute love in my heart that I think this is a really bad path to try to walk down where you rely on Kickstarters. I mean, let's paint the picture. So I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Kickstarter's user base, and by user base, I mean people that have backed some Kickstarter project in the past, their credit card is now stored on Kickstarter's system. It is at least conceivably easy for them to go click, I will back Brad Geiger's book, right? I think that user base now, Brad, is safely in the tens of millions, is it not? I'm pretty sure.
But yeah,
I think we can safely assume that it is. I like our fact-based show. I think we can safely assume that the number that I threw out is correct. But what I'm getting at is, so you're in your mind going, well, okay, Kickstarter, go ahead. What's the number?
I just looked it up. As of, according to Statista.com, as of July 2021, close to 20 million people had pledged their monetary support.
Okay, yeah.
20 million people.
So you're in there going, if I could even snag 1% of that audience, 200,000 people, if I could even snag a fraction of that, I've got tens of thousands of people, right? And it's not going to happen. Is the short form, and the reason goes back to Brad's idea of crowdfunding. Brad,
yeah. First comes the crowd, then comes the funding. In other words, when you heard Adam, when you heard us talking about, hey, this is so great, Kickstarter, I did a Kickstarter and I looked, and I think my last Kickstarter, maybe close to 30% of the people hadn't heard of me before. They found out about
me
through
Kickstarter.
Is that true,
really? You think 30%?
Yeah, it was close to 30%.
All right.
Yeah. But that still means I had to bring 70%.
Yeah.
I couldn't have done it just with the 30. And 30% is pretty healthy for your garden variety web cartoonist. That might be between 10 and 20. And I think 30 is the upper reaches. You're still responsible for 70. Then you heard Dave a couple episodes ago saying that Kickstarter is solid evidence that it's really hard with a day by day. You heard everything that Dave was doing for outreach, most or all of which, well, not all of which, but most of which was social media. And this was banging the drum repeatedly. Then he had stretch goals that were done for a special strategy of just having more social media juice. Then he had a strategy of launching this thing on Patreon to kickstart the Kickstarter algorithm. He had a whole show where he was talking about all of this stuff. And then there were people on the last day that said, oh, I'm just finding out about this. Yeah. How do I jump in? Now you're going to take all of that and get rid of it and try to do it just on Kickstarter alone. I will tell you that it's not impossible. It's not impossible. You could do it.
You could do it. Sure.
But now we come back to, we take first comes the crowd, then comes the funding off the table. Now it comes to do a good comic. And it comes to another axiom you hear on this all the time. It's not the art, it's the writing. So now you've got to come up with a comic that is written so well and that you have the ability to communicate that writing so effectively that strangers are brought to it and then push it forward just on the strength of that alone. In other words, if you have written a comic that is so freaking undeniably good, then yes, you can do this. I haven't gotten to that level yet.
Nor have I. Yeah.
I hope, and Adam, I hope you do. If you're planning on doing this, here's the problem with this is that the last few shows, and I've been listening to this and seeing a lot of it, and it's time to course correct a little bit, Dave, on Comic Lab. We've been saying an awful lot about late stage social media and the algorithm locking down and all this other stuff. And we've seen a lot of people saying, yeah, you're right. Social media stinks and I ain't doing it no more. And I'm going to have an email newsletter.
And that's going, whoa.
can we talk about that for a minute? Because there's something you need to understand about email newsletters. And it's this, there's something called an open rate. If you sign up with MailChimp or anything else, you're going to find an open rate. You know what the average open rate for an arts-based mailing list is?
I'm going to get, well, I'm going to guess 25 to 35%. Am I in the
ballpark? 26%. Okay. A percent.
Yeah, that was a guess. All right, yeah.
I looked it up just recently for a webcomics.com post, and the average throughout is 25%. That means that one quarter of the people that signed up to get uninterrupted messaging just from you. Remember, that was always the complaint about social media.
Right.
These people followed me on social media because they wanted to hear from me and the algorithm's not letting them hear from me. All these people that signed up specifically to get uninterrupted messaging from you don't open that message 75% of the time, or 75% of the people are not opening them up. It's somewhere in the middle, right? But they're not opening every message. They don't want to hear from you every time.
Right.
And then the click-through rate is like 1% to 2%. In other words, when they do open it and you talk about your Kickstarter, of those one quarter of the people that signed up that actually open it, only 1% of those people are clicking links.
Right.
This is you are absolutely smart to have an email outreach right now. We stand by that. But for those of you who are looking at this and thinking, that's it, kind of like, you know, that's it, I'm taking my ball to another playground and you're storming off, and social media stunk. Well, listen, we agree. There's some real problems with social media. This is not the time to leave social media.
Right.
This is not a magic weapon.
A helpful visual is probably that same idea that we say in terms of income, that you want to have many legs under the table, like in terms of book sales, Patreon, Kickstarter, convention sales, right? We always talk about income. But the same is also kind of true with outreach, where what we're really saying is that because social media is not what it was 5, 6, 8 years ago in terms of the immediacy of outreach, that, hey, now is a great time to roll back in an increased email campaigns, but that doesn't mean take out the social media stuff. It just means put it one more leg under that table, because one of them is getting a little wobblier than it used to be, but it doesn't mean get rid of that leg. It means keep building on all of them. But Brad, I want to jump back into what the point that you were making though, which was that you said you had 30% of your most recent Kickstarter was from Kickstarter. I will say, cause I want to get very specific about this, that my Drive Kickstarter was much more successful than the past two Sheldon Kickstarters. I think the Sheldon Kickstarters I'm ballparking, but somewhere in the range of $30,000, $40,000, maybe $50,000. And then the Drive Kickstarter just did 116. But Drive only had 5% of its backers were from Kickstarter. Now, I only mention that because Drive did infinitely better in manipulating Kickstarter's own algorithm than the two Sheldon books did, right? Because it had $70,000 on the first day, it triggered all sorts of those self-reinforcing algorithms that Kickstarter has to try to basically pick winners. And so I got on the front page, I got under a project we loved, I got as a featured project, I got a couple other things that like ostensibly will help out. And yet it only brought in 5% of my total backers for that campaign. Yeah. So I mentioned that saying that even if you get everything right, even if you strike lightning in a bottle or catch lightning in a bottle for all of the algorithms all within Kickstarter's ecosystem, it still might not do what you want it to do, which is to help you reach funding. So I agree with Brad. Can it happen? Yes. Is it far less likely to not happen than happen? Yes. I think it's really hard to rely on Kickstarter's 20 million people bringing you a couple thousand purely based on the reach of that audience. I think that's a bad impulse. And I really think, listen to Brad, that first comes the crowd, then comes the funding when you do your crowdfunding.
Yep. There's a reason it's a Geiger's law. It's because it's the law. Well, maybe not the law, but it's something I feel strongly about, is that you're going to have to put your time in doing audience building first.
And I will just say, you can fight the Geiger's law, but the law is going to win.
That's right. That's right. You know what?
That's the most dad joke I've made all day. I crown myself dad joke of the week. All right, keep going.
You're just darn lucky that I didn't start singing the I fought the law and the law won song. That would have been even worse.
I and everyone's ears are very happy about that. Yes.
Well, you know what? The other law that we've got to fight is the law of Father Time, because ours have run out yet again. And that means that you've been listening to Comic Lab, the show about making comics and making a living from comics.
Your host has been my friend Brad Geiger, the editor of webcomics.com and the creator of Evil Inc. at evil-comic.com.
And my good friend Dave Kellett, the co-director of the comics documentary Stripped and the cartoonist of Sheldon at sheldoncomics.com and the long-form story comic Drive at drivecomic.com.
And of course, our sponsors for today, the good folks at Wacom at WACOM.com, makers of the Wacom One. And of course, this show and all of our shows go out live at the time of recording to our Live Gab audience over at patreon.com/comiclab. So please join us over there. The Comic Lab theme song is used with permission from Andy Creighton at theworldrecord.net. And this episode was edited by Matt Woodard of Woodsong Productions over at www.woodsong.media.
If you love Comic Lab, you can rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, and you may hear your review featured on a future episode like this one. Comes in from Sean, who says, hilariously informative. If you want to know the ins and outs of running a small business, and especially if you want to make comics, Brad and Dave have a combined 40 years of pioneering the medium of comics in the 21st century.
And given our age difference, I should point out that means that Brad has 35 years of comics making, and I only have 5. Brad, my infinite senior on the show, as we've learned from this week's episode. And so I'll say Comic Lab is made possible by your support on patreon.com/comiclab, and we appreciate that support so much. So we'll go ahead and say it twice, patreon.com/comiclab. And for those listening at home, if you want the extended version of Brad's screed, measuring in at over 3 hours and 49 minutes, you can check out patreon.com/comiclab. Bring a pillow.